Before we get to today's show, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Veracross. With a single record database and the strongest API in the industry, Veracross is the leading SIS provider for private and independent schools, and it's now available in Australia. Support us by supporting them, so visit veracross.com/edleaders to learn more. Now let's get to today's show. Welcome to Ed Leaders, the podcast covering all the interesting ideas about leadership, strategy, culture, and the business of K-12 education. I'm your host, Luke Kelly, and joining me each week in the chair is my co-host and colleague, Matthew Irving. And before we get started, if you haven't already, you should sign up for the Ed Leaders newsletter. Matt, you're not going to ask it. What should someone expect if they sign up?
What can they expect? Well, Luke, I've got to tell you a story. Every morning, I do a quick scan of my emails. I don't go bit by bit. I just scan for the high-level sort of urgent emails, and it's the one I look for. So if it is pops up, I actually read it straight away. I see it as an urgent piece of content that I need to consume. So how's that?
You've heard it from Matt Irving. It's urgent.
It's urgent. Urgent.
Matt Irving says. All right. Well, I'll give you a 9 out of 10 for that one, Matt. Well played.
Thank you.
You can sign up for the newsletter at edleaders.com.au. Now on to today's episode, which is part of our paid sponsorship with Veracross. And today we are learning a little bit more about the people behind the product, the brand new product to Australia. We have Chris Pantlin and Jessica Wallace. Chris is a former teacher who held a range of management and leadership positions over 10 years working in schools before making the switch to EdTech 5 years ago. Is now currently the account executive for Veracross in Australia. And fun fact about Chris, he speaks German fluently. Hallo.
Hallo.
Achtung, that's about the only two words I know. Anyway, Jessica has spent her entire career in EdTech, predominantly in leading product management, and joined Veracross 5 years ago and is now the chief product officer. She's also a lifelong Girl Scout and now Girl Scout leader. So without further ado, let's get to it.
Sounds good.
Jessica, Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. Great to be here.
All right. Now, we love to start the podcast with hearing about your journeys. I've given a little brief overview there of your journeys, but we'd love to hear more about your own individual journeys, kind of through education, your experiences in education, and how you ended up in the education world.
Sure. I can kick off. So, yeah, the German part for me is probably where it all started a little bit. I had was always interested in languages and travel and et cetera, and got to high school, wanted to learn a language, and had a so-so teacher in year 7, but had a great teacher in year 8 for German, who ended up taking me for 5 years the whole way through my high school, and also led our tour over to Germany that we did on a German exchange trip in year 10. So she was obviously a very influential person for me, and yeah, I just loved learning German at school. And when I finished school, I knew that's what I wanted to do afterwards. So I went off to uni and studied German and studied teaching, and kind of came full circle and eventually got back into teaching. Yeah, so no, that's probably where it starts for me. And yeah, spent 10 years at a couple of high schools working in Melbourne, and then in 2018 had a little bit of a change, I guess. Certainly before COVID, it felt like a novelty, but I had the opportunity to move into EdTech and work remotely, which sounded appealing. I just had our first kid. And I think the chance to be at home and be spending a bit more time with the family was, really attractive. So made the switch.
Excellent. And Jessica?
Well, my background, my mother was a kindergarten teacher, and I spent many a days with her at the elementary school that she worked at. And my father was a university professor. And so you can say education for me started out then, but I used to think that I wanted to be a teacher myself, but then I saw all that my mom and her colleagues dealt with on a day-to-day basis with the parents, and that decided that wasn't the life for me. So I went to school for business, and while in college, saw an opportunity to start working at a company called Diamond Mind that in the US does payment services for K-12 private schools, independent schools. And that, because of my parents, that interested me working in ed tech. And then I've stuck around ever since. I stayed at Diamond Mind and then what's now Community Brands K-12 for 10 and a half years. before trying to do something a little bit more mission driven with Hobson's on the Naviance product line, trying to help connect students and their academic achievements to their higher education goals, as well as just career path, before joining Faircross about 5 years ago, as you said.
And Chris, going back to you and thinking about your jump from education in the classroom to that edutech sort of space, what was the biggest shift for you in thinking and approach?
Oh, good question. I think I'm not sure. It's such a good question. I always love teaching. I love being in the classroom. And I think since moving out of teaching, sometimes I'll get asked when I go and visit a school, when did you get out or whatever? And I sort of don't really like that question, because it wasn't so much that I got out. It was just that I had an opportunity to try something different and decided to, be someone that says yes and give it a go a little bit. I guess you get to be, you don't have that direct involvement with students anymore, which I must admit I miss. Some of my favorite professional experiences are when you've had that great lesson and you walk out and you've just got a really good buzz after knowing that you've cut through with some kids. But you do get to have some impact at, a more macro level, which can be really interesting. And I think probably in my teaching career, it was somewhat narrow in the sense that I worked at two schools in Melbourne that were sort of, funnily enough, probably 2.5 kilometres from each other. So very similar kind of communities. Whereas since moving over to EdTech, I've had the chance to visit schools all around Australia. I've visited government schools, private schools, Catholic schools, primary schools, high schools. I guess I've learned a range of different things from visiting those schools and speaking to the leaders and educators in those schools.
And Jessica, just for the audience out there, as we kind of get started, obviously we've talked about the Veracross at length throughout the last kind of 10, 12 episodes of the podcast. Kind of wondering in your own words as the chief product officer, perhaps the 60-second elevator pitch, just to set the scene for those, maybe tuning into the podcast for the first time, don't really know what Veracross is about.
Sure. So Veracross is a student information system that really has a product offering that spans all the way across campus with our five core modules. We were founded about 20 years ago on three key pillars. First off, that being cloud-based from the offset, we've never had an on-prem solution. And so it really helps us with schools to have this one record database from inquiry all the way to alumni or fundraising, that it is cloud-based and there's no messy navigating of data transfers or lack of access anywhere you need. We also, the second pillar would be that we prioritize user experience for all of the different roles across campus, and even if you're multiple roles, right? So if you have it's very common to have a teacher that's also a parent, maybe an alumni as well, and all that, making sure that that's a clean user experience. And then lastly, our data expertise. The one record architecture is really unrivaled globally for the different SIS options that are out there.
And Jessica, one of the ways I also sort of describe Veracross is this kind of end-to-end solution for schools. And I'm really interested, sure, what sort of market, I guess, in education are you targeting in providing your solution?
So we only work with independent K-12 schools. That means no higher ed, no government or state schools, depending on where we are globally. You might call them different things. We have always worked with K-12 independent schools, and we work with them across the globe with a focus in the US, the UK, and Australia especially.
I think maybe if I could jump in there, one thing that might be nice to add is we have had we are relatively new to Australia, but we've had our first school sign up, which is a very large, well-known school. But we've also, in terms of schools that are kind of just about to come out the other end, in terms of very close to signing contracts, we've got a range of schools. So we've got a really small, 50-student boarding school in Melbourne that's very close to coming on board, which is exciting. We've got a mid-range school as well in terms of sort of about 500 kids in regional Queensland. And we've got, you know, a probably more of a mid-range sort of capital city style school as well. So it's not just that it only exists for sort of large schools or for boarding schools or what have you. It really is something that suits any independent school.
And Chris, in that context then, you know, you're sort of on the ground here in Australia and you're sort of meeting with schools and traveling. And every time I talk to you, you seem to be in another airport. Can you just sort of describe to our listeners your role in Veracross here in Australia?
Yeah, sure. So essentially my role is to get out and chat to schools, learn about what they're doing, understand, I guess, which systems they're using now, if there's any gaps they've identified with their setup that they're trying some problems they're trying to solve perhaps, and trying to address those gaps that they've got there, and to really introduce Veracross to them. So the conversations range from, no, I've never heard of Veracross, tell me a bit more, to, yeah, we've sort of been chatting to you for a little while or having a look for a little while. We'd like to get a bit deeper. And I'm sort of having those initial conversations with schools to help them understand that. I guess in my role, what's really great is that we've got a great team behind me as well. So whilst I'm sort of, out there meeting schools and having those conversations, there's a huge amount of resources that I've got at my disposal that I can pass on to schools. So the biggest library of brochures I think I've ever seen, a huge range of recorded demonstrations and videos as well. Yeah, I guess I've worked for three edtech companies now, Veracross being the third. And one thing that I love about Veracross from a kind of internal perspective in terms of how we work is that we've got people sort of aligned with really, I guess, specific roles. So it's not my job to do everything, but once we get into doing sort of a deep dive demo, really getting into that product expertise, well, there's a specific role for that. So someone comes in and it's just their role only to focus on demonstrating that particular area, which is super helpful for me.
One of the things we like to kind of discuss here on the Ed Leaders podcast is a lot about leadership. And I'm kind of curious for both of you around, you know, what attributes and skills you feel like you had that made you stand out in your early kind of career roles as you took on more senior and more executive and leadership roles. What stood out for you? Maybe Jessica, kick us off.
Sure. I think I actually started my career really doing the opposite of what Chris just said. I was a jack of all trades, if that translates, it was what was needed for the company because I was one of the first employees at Diamond Mind, the company I mentioned earlier. I think what helped me move forward in my career and helped me stand out was mainly my ability to or my desire to take command of situations and really help drive projects forward, and just accountability and passion for what I was doing, whether that was helping a customer implement the product, answering some questions to help a school with some angry parents that were trying to make their payments maybe, or if it was building our new tuition offering to accept fees, billing, payments, and things like that. So it was really just about the accountability and desire to drive things forward that I think helped me stand out.
And for me, I think, when I started teaching, I was barely older than some of the kids I was teaching. I was sort of school method. I guess I just have always loved education and really valued what education can deliver to people. And I think that probably came through in my teaching. I was also super passionate about the product area, the area of the curriculum I was teaching, being German. So, I was just really excited to come into work every day and to pass on some of the knowledge that I'd received and to give the kids a great experience like I'd had myself as well. So I think that probably shone through. I think in my teaching, I always really valued relationships with students. I think it's really hard to cut through from a teaching perspective if the kids don't have some sort of connection to you and don't have that sort of relationship with you. And one of the things that gives me a lot of joy is every now and then, you know, sometimes years later, depending on when it was last that I taught these kids, I'll get kids reach out to me on, you know, they find me on LinkedIn or Facebook or something and say, oh, you know, I remember being in your class and, you know, I remember this certain memory that sometimes I've forgotten, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. And yeah, so it's really nice. And I think, yeah, valuing the people that you're working with is really important. And it's funny with German, you know, in the schools I taught in, it was compulsory in year 7 and year 8. And I think, you know, it's pretty important to have English and maths and so on and so forth. But you can live a pretty good, happy life without speaking German, especially in Australia. So there were kids in my classes, particularly in year 8 towards the end of the year, that had worked out that German maybe wasn't for them. And I think I was always good at finding a way to include them and still make sure that they got some value out of the lesson and still were able to contribute and have a good time in the 50 minutes they spent with me, rather than, you know, just kind of getting them through somehow. I think just still trying to value their experience.
And a question to both of you, you know, as part of, I guess, your leadership journeys, no doubt you've understood that relationships are key, you know, to the way you work. And Jessica, you talked about roles and clarity, but, you know, in that edutech space, you know, you're having to collaborate every single day. And Chris, you talked about resources behind you. I wonder if you could sort of describe, you know, the way you lead, but how you build those collaborative relationships to move the business forward. Jessica, we might start with you.
Sure. So I will say that I really believe in servant leadership in general. And I think that really comes with building relationships, making sure that I think relationships are the foundation of everything in business and really, really key. And I pride myself in being a very empathetic person. And I think that's a key for servant leadership and making sure that you're seeing people, seeing their strengths and empowering them to be able to be leaders too. That's going to have a much better impact on our business than just me trying to take the leadership role all the time. Having, you know, 100 leaders is going to have more value there. I think building relationships in general has become more challenging for people as we've been in the pandemic, and noting that people have to bring their whole selves to work because they were working from home and working remotely, where not everybody was used to that. I have the benefit of, like Chris, that I've spent a lot of my career remote. And so I think I have a little bit more muscle memory with that. And so trying to help the organization through the pandemic, because I'm better at building some of those relationships from in a remote setting, was really important. But it also plays into that empathy and making sure that you're not only meeting your customers where they are, but meeting your team where they are too, and helping them grow their strengths through that.
Yeah, and I think for me, with my leadership journey, I started off teaching, as I sort of mentioned, and I really did like the idea of being able to have that broader experience, and moved into my first management or leadership role was as a year 7 year level coordinator. And as part of the school I was in at the time, I was able to be put forward to participate in a program called Leaders in the Making, and got to do some real leadership training there, which was really great. That was organized through the Department of Education in Victoria. And I think we looked at a few different leadership models, and some things that really stuck with me, I think, were the symbolic leadership and cultural leadership. I think that's probably really important in the management and leadership roles I've had. I think sort of doing as I say and as I do sort of thing. So, leading by example and demonstrating the sort of attributes that I think are important at work. I've also really found it important to, I think, trust people and sort of, you know, where possible, obviously, empowering people to do it their way and giving them autonomy to make their own decisions about things and sort of demonstrating and communicating that trust. In some ways, trying to, you know, get out of their way as the leader and trusting them that they're going to do the right thing. And I know a phrase that I learned about sort of student management, which I think applies really well to people management, is catching people doing the right thing. So rather than having a conversation about a mistake someone might have made, is rather sort of, you know, pointing out when they've done something really great and passing on feedback there. And I think that feels, you know, really nice to somebody and obviously helps them know what the right thing is to do next time and gives them that positive feedback.
Now, Jessica, earlier you kind of mentioned about your first role and that notion of taking control. You know, what I heard in the background there might have been something around maybe a little bit of a control freak when it comes to like controlling things. Now, I'm wondering, does that translate into being the chief product officer where you ultimately have control of the product? And what does that look like on a day-to-day basis to be the chief product officer?
Yeah, I would say that I do not consider myself a control freak. I hope that others don't either. So, you know, we have people shaking their heads on for people that are just listening. So maybe I'm on the right on the nose there with not being a control freak. But I do think that early on taking command was really important for me, and now empowering others is. So with our product management team, who for anyone that doesn't have kind of the business background, product management, we define what we're going to build and why. And so with Veracross, we have Veracross, we have a few other brands as well. And so there's no way that I could ever take control of all the different roadmaps of what's coming in our product offerings across all of that. And nor would I want to, because I have people on my team that have specialized experience in the area of their products. So for example, I have someone on my team that was in the fundraising development office of a higher ed organization. He oversees that module as well as others. Someone that was in admissions office working over our admissions offering and academics. So they have better expertise than I do. My job is really to boil down the corporate strategy into a product strategy and vision for them so that they're able to have their own autonomy and building their own roadmaps with support, of course, and you know, clear roadblocks for them and help connect them to what they need and guide them. Hopefully I didn't get too far away from the question there with that answer.
Perfect.
No, I think you're pretty close there. And Chris, I imagine, you know, the way in which you operate is different to Jessica. You know, in particularly in, you know, we often think about hierarchical leadership sort of structures versus distributed ones. And I imagine in your role, you're doing a lot of leading up and leading from the sidelines rather than, you know, in a distributed context rather than a hierarchical one. Does that resonate?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. So, I mean, in my role now, I certainly don't have anybody reporting into me or anything like that, which is nice. I've had that before, and it's nice to have a little break from that. Yeah, it's essentially, I guess, a key part of my role is essentially leading the project of helping a school evaluate our system. So it's knowing when to bring in the right people at the right time and having, you know, information well documented to provide to them so they've got background on the school and the context, making sure I know which resources we've got available. And I think in terms of, you know, schools that are moving towards the end of the evaluation process is then moving over to the implementation process and making sure there's really good information to pass on to the implementation team and to make sure that next stage of the project is really successful as well. There's also quite a bit of, I guess, hearing information from the field and passing that back. So if we get, schools tell us things that they'd like, you know, a particular integration they're interested in or a particular area of the product that they'd pass on some feedback about, or they've got a magic wand that they, you know, want to wave and they've got some ideas for us. It's part of my role as well to pass that on to perhaps Jessica initially and then to the right person in her team.
And we really value that feedback that Chris passes on. But I hope you don't mind me saying, Chris, I also see you, He does lead a lot of the team in Australia indirectly in supporting the new team members as our team is growing and growing in Australia and making sure as the first kind of person on the ground there, I observe that he's doing that for sure. He's definitely leading them.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Jessica. I think, yeah, I started first for Veracross here. So I was here in April and it was a lonely one-man band for a little while, but we had our second team member joined in July. And I guess, I mean, even just sort of by default, really, given that I'd been there the longest and had been through some onboarding and learnt the product and learnt the way the company works a little bit, is that I've probably taken on a bit of a de facto role in helping those new people come into the organization. And I have really enjoyed that. That's been really fun, actually. And then the team's grown quite quickly. Yeah, we were 2 in July. We're 7 now. We'll be 8 Monday week. We'll be at least 10 by the start of January. So as those people do come in, yeah, it's just about, I think, finding some time in the calendar to make sure we have some check-ins and provide them information and set them up for success in terms of, you know, looping them in with other colleagues as well that are going to be able to support them. And yeah, working remotely can be somewhat challenging. And it's interesting, actually, one of the guys who is working with us here in Australia, I worked with him previously, and he was living not too far from the office from that company. And I think for him, it's been a bit of a shift to work remotely, and he's maybe found that at times somewhat challenging or isolating. So I mean, we put our heads together and we've just set up a weekly check-in for the Australian team, which has been really nice to have that. And then just, yeah, the other sort of, you know, ad hoc check-ins as we go, just to make sure that we're staying connected, which can be a bit more of a challenge in a busy day when you're not sort of, you know, bumping into each other in the hallway or fighting over who's first for the microwave or whatever it might be. You've got to sort of make a bit more effort when you're remote to make sure that you are checking in.
Chris, I'm interested in, you know, success criteria as a leader, particularly in the type of role that you're looking at. You know, I can imagine that, you know, you're looking at 10 staff by January. That's you know, an indicator of success. What are some of the other cues you're looking for, particularly when you're working with sort of clients and you might not necessarily see the end outcome? You know, what are the cues you're looking at to understand your own impact and success as a leader?
Sure. I think probably the really important thing is when basically just providing all the information to a school so that they can make an informed decision. A little bit like I mentioned previously with the getting that buzz from teaching a really good lesson with the kids, I actually get a similar buzz from sort of doing an initial overview demonstration, and you see the excitement on their faces, and you just get a sense that, you know, we're sort of going somewhere with this. That can be a really similar buzz as well. And I think, delivering that information in an engaging way that gets people excited and sort of brings them along the journey is a key part of my job. I think probably the ultimate success that we could look for is to have someone obviously join Veracross, become a customer, but also become an advocate and someone that is going to go and chat with colleagues and talk with other schools, be someone who's spruiking about us when they're coming to a conference or event and saying, you know, we are working with Veracross and we found it to be really great. And I think what's really nice for us is that we've got some good metrics around that in terms of our retention rates for schools over the journey of the company, actually. So we've had 99% retention over the life of the company, which is super strong. We've also got really strong retention internally in terms of our staff. So my manager's been with us for 12 years, and one of my colleagues here, his manager's been with Veracross for nearly 20 years now. I think he was the second or third ever employee. And we've had our director of implementations come down to Australia. He's been with Veracross for 16 years, and our head of engineering was here just a few weeks back. He's been with us for 15 years, and so on and so forth. So there's some real longevity within the building, which means a lot of that knowledge is, I guess, still in their heads, and we still have access to, which is great. But further to that, I think another really important metric of how we're doing, not just me in my role, but my colleagues as well, is we measure our NPS, which is our Net Promoter Score. And schools have a number of opportunities where they can provide feedback in the form of a survey as to whether they would recommend Veracross to a friend or family member, or perhaps not. And I'm not sure if the listeners are familiar with NPS and how that works, but it's a standard industry metric. And I think 20 is considered to be good and 50 is considered to be excellent. And ours is sitting at 58. So we've got a really nice community of schools that work with us. And, you know, we put on events like Veracross Connect, for example, where schools come and share best practice. And not just sort of one or two, but a huge amount of schools are coming along and participating in that. So it is a really nice community in terms of the people that work with us, and they choose to stay with us and they contribute. It's really nice.
You've both mentioned kind of throughout our chat about the length of time that you've been doing, remote working, like almost as though you mm-hmm. would be probably considered some of the OGs of remote working, probably back in the day, and you were probably using Skype. I don't even know. I'm wondering if you could describe, potentially some of the differences between working remotely when you started working remotely and what you see now, you know, 5, 8, 10 years later, and what impact, if any, the corona pandemic had on working remotely for both of you.
I can definitely jump in there. When the first company that I worked remotely for was based in Sydney and I was based in Melbourne, and I think there were probably not that many people who were remote. I had 2 or 3 colleagues in Melbourne and maybe only sort of 2 or 3 other colleagues who weren't in Sydney. So it wasn't, I guess, a remote first company. It was kind of come to the office first, and there were a few remote people as well. And what I probably saw there is that people probably got forgotten a little bit when they were remote. There wasn't necessarily that thinking that, oh, we, you know, really need to make sure that we include remote people. And that could be things like, you know, had a whole company update. There was only audio and not video and things like that, just sort of those smaller things that make you, I guess, just realize that you are somewhat on the outer and not always part of it. And, you know, to be fair, there were things that they did, of course, that they did try to include people, but I guess people hadn't had as much practice at it. So with the advent of COVID and everybody having a turn at working remotely, at least on the eastern seaboard here in Australia, I think people probably got more experience with it, more practice with it, and learned some different ways that remote workers could be included. And with Veracross is actually remote first. So whilst we do have some physical offices around the world that staff do go into, we are remote first. So if staff choose to work remotely, they're not required to go into the office. And I guess because of that, there's a number of considerations that have been made to make sure that we're set up for success for people that work remotely.
You say that it was only phone and there wasn't video set up for conference calls, Chris, but I think when I started, I remember I had to get a landline in my apartment because I didn't have good cell coverage and they wouldn't even use like voice over IP because they thought it wasn't reliable enough. So there was no video at all when I first started remote. And I think that's a huge change, is just seeing the shift in even us right now while we're recording this, being able to see each other's faces while you're talking has such a added benefit and it's such a different experience. But overall, the tools that are available when you're remote. So like in the pandemic, we had some schools in the US that started using this product called OWL that is a little plastic owl that sits on a table or somewhere and it turns its head around and captures whoever's talking as they're talking. So it's like the people that are remote are in the room, and they used it because they had some teachers that couldn't even come in once the classrooms opened back up. They weren't ready to, and they had proctors in their classroom. So it really helped them teach remotely even, which I thought was really innovative. But it's tools like that that I think have really changed the game in making it easier to have productive meetings as well as those more personal connections.
And Jessica, one of the things you talked about sort of early on in our conversation is that idea of remote leadership. You know, and you talked about having some muscle memory around that. And I'm just, you know, as we sort of talked about this evolution of sort of remote work, you know, I can't help think that we don't really talk about remote leadership very often. So yeah, I wonder what kind of sort of practices or your go-tos are to sort of shape that leadership in that remote context?
That's a really good question. I think I will say when I started at Veracross, I was the only remote leader then. It's not the case anymore. But it was important to our CEO that I be in the office regularly. So before the pandemic, I was in the office every other week for 3 days. So quite a lot of back and forth. I live right outside of Washington, D.C., and our office, this is probably geography that is wasted a little bit, so sorry, but our office is, if I was driving 8 hours north, right outside of Boston, Massachusetts. So it was a lot of travel back and forth for me then. I didn't see a difference in how I led then, because I was still remote the majority of the time, but that from then until through the pandemic and now even. And I think probably one of the most important things in being a good leader while being remote is making sure that you're paying attention to everyone and that you're making time for people. Something that I heard about my father, as he was a professor at a university, And he also was on boards and things. And he was a really busy, busy guy. But people would always say about him that he always made time for a student if they had a question, even if he was running late. He always would give somebody 5 minutes and say, I can give you 5 minutes now and I'll give you more time later. And that really stuck with me when I was hearing those stories and how people, that's how he was remembered as something that would be really important for me. And it's something that I've tried to apply in my career. And I think that that's a really key piece of not only making yourself available, but making sure people know you're available. Making sure that they get positive reinforcement when they do interact with you, that they can always feel free to say, do you have a few minutes? Can you make a few minutes for me? I have something I need to run by you and get your opinion on. And it kind of can help replace that big gap that I think we all felt in the pandemic of having those hallway conversations or being able to just pop into somebody's office to get some feedback and ideas.
I guess one of the things, you know, Matt and I have talked about is the generational shift or societal shift to thinking that remote working, people like yourselves, is something that more people want to do, that more people want to have flexibility with their work. And schools don't really allow that very, very much. There's not a lot of flexibility when you think about timetables and grids and, you know, requirements to be in classrooms. Is there anything that you can kind of, I guess, advice you could give or thoughts you have on how schools might address, you know, the future of the workforce when more and more people want to have some flexibility to work remotely and do things that are, you know, have some more flexibility with it?
I guess thinking about the podcast today and some of the different leadership things that I've done, I referenced that Leaders in the Making course I did, and I remember I had the chance to listen to Lynn Watts, who's someone who was a principal in her 20s at a disadvantaged primary school here in Melbourne, and she'd had a really interesting journey, and she was such an inspirational leader. And one of the things I found really inspirational about her, and I can still remember, this is sort of 13, 14 years ago, is that she really sort of just did things her own way and was a bold leader and I guess had a strong sense of what she thought was best for her students and her school. I think there's probably the opportunity to do something similar in this space in terms of remote work and even just, you know, things change so quickly with technology and in terms of the way our society operates that, yeah, it might not happen in 1 or 2 years, but perhaps in 10 or 15, right, are we going to be moving to 4 days a week? There's already a number of organisations that are offering, you know, 4 day work weeks. Is that something that schools might offer or that some schools might be bold and attempt to offer? Would there be a hybrid system where you might have 3 days in school and 2 days remote? Obviously, for younger students, that might not necessarily be so relevant, but certainly for senior students, there's an opportunity to do that, I think. So, yeah, I mean, I could see that there could be some strong leaders that might try and differentiate their school and their community from some of the others by looking at some really transformative change like that and offering a different sort of model.
We have a customer that is a group of schools where through the pandemic, they created a online campus for their school and have a really interesting model for allowing students to maybe it's families that are bi-coastal or even living in multiple countries and the students being able to transfer and get the same education at each campus, which I think is really interesting. They do have the same teachers always at the same campuses. So I don't think that it's a very distance learning program or anything for helping their staff be remote, but it has allowed them to have some of their administrative staff be remote. And I see that in the United States as well for some of the support staff on campus having that ability to go remote. I would have no idea about teaching. Chris is obviously the expert there, but just to add in that flavor as well.
Jessica, we've just been talking about, you know, this idea of, you know, remote sort of leadership, remote learning, and I guess the opportunities that exist. It's not all bad. It's not one or the other. And you've just sort of started to describe a really nice success story, if you like, you know, with that school. What do you see have been some of the maybe the challenges? And I'm wondering if there might be a story of challenge, not only in your sort of your leadership context, but even perhaps a school context that you'd be willing to share.
In thinking about schools, I think we saw across the board a lot of schools who weren't thinking about having online services. And of course, for Veracross schools in the pandemic, it was a lot easier because, as I mentioned earlier, we're a cloud-based system. Everyone could transfer their work really easily to wherever they were located and wherever they were quarantining or whatever the case it was during the pandemic. We had to make some quick changes to the product, which we were well equipped to do because of the way that we develop the product, and adding in a few enhancements for having the ability to have an additional link in the schedule for the Zoom link if the school was using Zoom or another hybrid learning tool at the time. A big shift that we definitely saw, and I think a lot of schools had challenges with their learning management systems and making sure that the LMS was strong enough for a hybrid scenario, but for being separate from the students. So we did see a lot of schools add in additional software that we integrate with. And so we had to work quickly. It was challenging. I have to say it's been very, very challenging. So there we go. Being able to get those integrations right, not from our side, but just getting people to be able to play ball sometimes with those. But we're persistent, so we will keep at it. We've got many done already. I do think that the biggest challenge as a leader in business being remote is normally building those connections, and you have to be really purposeful about it and persistent about it to make sure that you're able to build strong relationships with the team and beyond just your team, right? So finding ways to connect with people that are in completely different departments and at different levels isn't always the easiest, but it's, I think, very, very important as you're needing to build buy-in from the entire company on a, for me, a product vision, or making sure that I'm understanding how our team can not only serve all of the schools that we work with, but also serve the rest of the team at Veracross and making sure that we're making their jobs easier as well.
Jessica, when you were describing the challenges of leadership, you know, talking about the creating a shared vision, you know, going in and out and understanding who does what in what team. For me, there's a lot of crossover there from when a principal comes in and they're setting a vision for a school and they're trying to work out which teams are high performing and who does what in that team. And I also think at a more broader level, there's this context of a new principal coming in, and often principals would describe it to us as a bit of the listening tour that they go on when they arrive in a school. There's this need to build the trust of both their staff and their students and the community. And I wonder whether there's any translation, you know, across organizations to a company like Veracross when you're coming into a new market like Australia. You come in and you're kind of not known. You're coming into a new market, and it's invariably very similar to a new principal who might be coming into a brand new state in a new school. I'm wondering if there's any specific things that you've learned across the journey when you're entering a new market that you specifically do to kind of deepen the understanding of that market and really embed yourselves within the community.
Sure. Yeah, you're hitting it on the head with, I think there is a lot of similarity, and even using the term listening tour, we use that at Veracross. Each of the executives, as they joined the team, did a listening tour for just our company, right? But I think that also applies 100% with new markets. Looking at Australia specifically, one of our key values at Veracross, and we really like live our values more so than like I think schools do, but more so than I've seen at any other business that I've worked with. One of the key ones is humility, and so we wanted to make sure that we weren't assuming that having any arrogance and coming into Australia and thinking, oh, that we can do it right, and ignoring the fact that there's a lot of companies that have tried to enter the ed tech market in Australia and have failed. And we wanted to learn from that first, right? So why did those other companies fail? I think a lot of it was because they didn't have enough people on the ground. They didn't pay enough attention to how Australia is different. Because all schools are different and unique individually, but of course it's going to be different, even though we may, for the most part, speak the same language. It's still going to be different each place. And so we didn't want to make those same mistakes, for sure. Which is why it's so important to have people on the ground like Chris and that growing team. But we also wanted to hear directly from schools. So learning from being able to connect to some of our Digistorm customers first, but then that's why it was so important to me to quickly be able to get to a conference where I'd have the opportunity. So to take a step back, Chris and I attended the ASBA conference. I guess that was just last month, which is crazy. It feels like it was so long and so recent at the same time, but it was really important to me to get on the ground so that I could talk to as many schools as possible in person. And, you know, quickly, actually, to kind of take a step back to what we were just talking about, to make those connections with the schools so that I could share those connections with my team. My team has done a lot of their own independent research, but there's nothing better than talking directly with people at the schools, because all of the research that we can do on how the government reporting needs to be, for example, isn't going to be as valuable as validating with actual schools. If we have you export this file right here, will that be good or bad for you? Which is a very high level elementary example there. My team does what we call expert user groups. And they're setting up expert user groups for a lot of different topics for Australia specifically, in addition to a general one. And that's how, in product, we're making sure that we have a really strong understanding of how the product needs to differ for Australia. And a really long commitment. This is something else that we learned from seeing what others did. A really long commitment to continue to invest in the product for Australia specifically. Or any other new market that we enter, right? So it can't be we're going to go to the UK. And so let's spend some money this year on our roadmap for making sure we have features there for the UK. It needs to be a long-term commitment with a set capacity that will serve those customers specifically to make sure that we don't lose sight of any of these different markets that we serve. And we're meeting the needs of our customers globally, even though those can differ.
Just to piggyback on what Jessica's saying there, she's perhaps undersold that somewhat. I think at the ASBA conference, she set up a number of meetings with school business managers or CFOs. And I guess to watch this wasn't just sort of a 2 or 3 minute fireside. This was, sitting down for half an hour and, just repeatedly, going through the same sort of questions and just validating, our understanding on what we've learned so far and seeing if there was any nuance in that for different schools and, asking questions about the school's exact context. And I was personally super impressed by that. And even the fact that we had, a printed out sort of postcard style brochure thing where, we were giving that out and saying, look, please, like we keep helping us inform our product development, come here and get involved with these user groups we're putting together. And even one anecdote is we had a session at ASBA with a school, and Jessica was able to get on Paige, who's one of our product owners, and I think it was late at night for her, but she was still really keen to jump on and have a chat with this school and take the opportunity there. So there is, I think we're a missional business, and Jessica's talked about a couple of our values, and one of them is service, and we really do live that and provide a great service to schools, which I think is really nice.
And as you're starting to describe, both of you are describing, really the culture and values of Veracross and the way you do business and the way that you consider your customers. And I like that idea of coming into Australia and, you've got to come with a level of humility and understanding it and lots of listening. but your people are really important. So when you're recruiting the right people, what are you looking for in terms of strengths and attributes to ensure that you maintain that sort of mission-based approach?
I would say it's our values first, which are service, humility, excellence, and inclusion. With that, for me specifically in product, the most important thing I think for product managers to have and naturally is empathy. I don't think you can teach empathy, and it's the most important thing if you're trying to understand customers' needs and users' needs. And then second to that is curiosity and kind of drive. So, you know, Paige, to use Chris's example, Paige, it was late at night for her, but she's so curious about wanting to understand the needs and has that real drive that she was willing to jump in and take advantage of that opportunity to speak to that school that was very interested in talking to her about vast statements of all things, right? So those are specific for product, but I think that there are qualities that our team looks for across the board as well. I think we look for people that are active listeners across the board, people that are able to strongly collaborate and communicate, because you can't really work together, and that's something that's so fun at Veracross. You can't really work together if you're not able to do that good collaboration and communication. And so with having this distributed workforce, it makes it really, really important.
And I think having just come through the hiring process, is that it's quite a rigorous process. I think it was three or four interviews, at least three.
I know. You got off easy.
even the most recent hire we had, it was for more of a sort of entry-level role, but nevertheless, it was still four interviews as part of that. And the first interview is always about the cultural fit and some of those soft skills that Jessica's talked about. The other thing I think in our team, not only in Australia but also globally, is we've got people that have been educators. So in Australia, there's seven of us at the moment. Three of us have been teachers. So I think having that lived experience of what it's like to be in the classroom is important, and having that understanding of education is important. And I know in the team more broadly, I referenced Jeremy before, who's been with us for nearly 20 years. And prior to that, he worked in schools. So we've, for a long time, had that that understanding of what it's like to be in a school.
I personally love hearing about hiring practices. I often ask about it, and I love hearing about people and organizations that spend a lot of time in the front end, you know, three, four, five, six interviews. The amount of time I think that you can, the more time that you can spend in the front end, means that I think the less issues and problems you're going to have down the track. And I think that can only be a good thing for organizations. And I think hearing of companies that have people that have been around, like many people that have been around 10, 15, 20 years, also says something pretty interesting about an organization. So I'm impressed by that. But Matt, that brings us to my favorite segment, the 6 in 60 seconds. There's just one rule, and that's it should be one word or idea, guys. That's all you need to do. Now, as Matt would know, no one ever follows the rules, so I give you a grade at the end, and depending on how you've gone. You guys ready to roll?
Ready to go.
Let's go.
All right. One thing that you're most proud of during your career?
Who's going first?
You are, because you spoke first.
All right. The relationships I've built with people.
It's not one word. I had a customer tell me that they cried tears of joy when they got an enhancement announcement. Making someone feel something emotional about a product is all I can wish for.
Bum, bum. Didn't follow the rules on that one, but we'll let you off. The most underrated role in a school in business. Yeah, well, or a business. Yep.
Sales enablement.
Support.
The most inspirational speaker you've ever seen at a conference.
Not a conference, but presenting a speech, Morgan Tsvangirai.
Barack Obama.
That's a good answer. I don't think we've had that answer before, Matt. That's impressive.
And I stood on speaking with him, but I was trying to keep it.
Yeah, look, now your mark's going up, so that's all right. if you could change one rule or one thing in either education or the ed tech industry, what would it be?
In education, giving kids, and in particular older kids, more autonomy, more independence.
The value on standardized tests.
And lastly, one book worth reading.
Atomic Habits.
I don't read nonfiction, so I'm going to say The Island of Sea Women.
Actually, I do have one more for you. And lastly, one person we should interview on the podcast.
Not a person as such, but maybe interview some principals in schools in different countries around the world, because I think in all sorts of different countries and different regions, there can be different pearls of wisdom to pick up.
I'm playing off of Chris, but because of the growing potential needs in Australia, some fundraising officers from US schools.
All right, not bad answers there. You kept them pretty brief. You were going down in my book, Jessica, but you brought yourself back up with the Obama answer. I'm going to give you both 8 out of 10 today. Well played.
Thank you so much.
So with that, that brings an end to our show for today. Matt, closing comments. I know you've got them.
I'm struggling to read my writing this morning, but, you know, I love the idea that, you know, Veracross, you know, really is a purpose-driven organisation. It's a purpose-driven business. You know, its purpose comes first, profit second, where culture, values, relationships and people matter. And that's sort of rung true, I think, this morning as we've been talking. I also like Jessica's idea of, I guess, the different dimensions of leadership. Sometimes you need to have that servant leadership and empathy, but sometimes you just need to be clear around accountability, and it's not an either-or proposition. I like success criteria of Chris. You know, it's not just the sign-up, but it's also the advocacy piece where people are talking about your product and in the marketplace. And I think the other thing we've learned this morning is that nature of remote leadership. It's not something that we talk a lot about. And I think that idea of paying attention, immediate responses, but also that follow-up and closing those loops and letting people know that you're available, I think it's a really important lesson in that remote context. So there's a few reflections from me this morning. Luke, I'm sure you've got some.
Yeah, I had a few. I liked the notion of that humility and bringing that, you know, as an organization to a new location. And I think there's, you know, there's crossover there to any, you know, role or organization when you move schools, when you're taking on new roles, that coming in with a lens of humility and understanding that you haven't been you haven't been walking in these shoes previously, where other people have. And I think that's an interesting crossover from an organization, ed tech organization, into schools. I loved Chris's comment of catching people doing the right thing. I think that's a really cool little pearl of wisdom there. And I think too often, you know, in schools, there's a case of we're trying to catch people doing the wrong thing. And occasionally, more often actually, that we, you know, making sure that we're catching people doing the right thing. And that can be the little things that, you know, sometimes may go unnoticed rather than, you know, the normal awards that we do on a year-to-year or an annual basis. And I just generally enjoyed the conversation about remote working, the challenges of that, you know, what it was like in the early days, what we've learned along the way, the best practice, you know, in some cases for that, what organizations and what schools can be thinking about as we move forward over the next 5 or 10 years of how that can be, you know, potentially further embraced to diversify people's ability to be involved in education. And I think that's going to be an important factor for schools as they look, you know, towards their workplace, you know, habits and their, you know, their how they're going to generate new employees and things like that. So I think that's an important aspect of the conversation. So thanks, guys, for giving up your time to be on the podcast this morning. Chris, Jessica, any other closing comments from yourselves, and where can people find you on the internet?
Fantastic opportunity to come and chat with you, Luke and Matt. So thanks for having us on, and it's been great working with you, sponsoring the podcast for just a little bit now. If people want to find us, veracross.com, they can find me on LinkedIn. On veracross.com, you can sort of find some information. And if you'd like to learn a little bit more, you can fill out a form there and we can get in touch and set up a meeting to to find out more about your school and share a few more details about us.
And Jessica?
You can, I guess, find me at veracross.com and LinkedIn as well.
All right. Well, if you're out there, please remember, if you haven't subscribed to the show, please don't forget to share the love. Tell a few of your colleagues that you've listened to this awesome podcast called Ed Leaders, and maybe they should be sharing it amongst their colleagues too. As I mentioned at the top of the show, if you're not signed up for the Ed Leaders newsletter, you're missing out. We publish every few weeks. We've been not as great as we have been in the past, but it's jam-packed with nuggets to level up your school leadership game. Check out edleaders.com.au for more details. Thanks again to Veracross, who have sponsored us over the last 10, 12 episodes. And we would be grateful if you spent some time checking them out. Connect with Chris. They are doing some wonderful things in the EdTech space. So help us by supporting them, checking them out, as they help us make this professional learning free for you. So thank you to Veracross for your continued sponsorship and partnership with Ed Leaders. You can connect with Ed Leaders and both Matt and I on LinkedIn, where we'll keep you up to date with what we're doing. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Go well.